Gary Parkinson at 50 on BBC Radio Lancashire.
Hello, welcome to the second and final part of Gary Parkinson at 50. Well, Gary's senior football career began at Middlesbrough and ended with Blackpool. He had successful spells with Burnley and Preston North End in between, as well as in a little spell out of full-time football, a stint in the commentary box here with BBC Radio Lancashire. His life and career changed in 2010 when a sudden stroke left him with locked-in syndrome. It's a rare condition which severely limits Gary's methods of communication. Well, throughout the next hour, we'll get a feel of how he celebrated his milestone 50th birthday. We'll find out what we can about his condition and find out what treatments are available to him right now that it's hoped one day we'll see him return to better health. But it's always important to get a dressing room perspective of someone, isn't it? So if you're wondering what Gary was like in his playing days, here are some of his pals to tell you.
Him and Tom Hall, they were like a married couple in the cell. You know, it's like grumpy old men, them two. One grumpy, and they loved them all. They could argue over colour of sky, you know, but in a lovely way. And no, I loved that. He'd take us for a warm-up, and his face would be ready, be blowing out, his proverbial, and he'd go, I need to get fit, you know.
Tight, worst dress sense ever. But a great footballer. He had the worst pair of... I bet he's still got them, actually. Chelsea boots ever. And, you know, like, come on, Parky, you can't be... And he wore them with everything. Everything. And he obviously had still his boy band hair from the Middlesbrough days when they all had it. If you look at his pictures when he played at Middlesbrough, all fantastic hair. And he still had that and loved that and everything. But, his dress sense, wow.
Our family's got on very well. You know, we had the same interest in that, but it was great banter with us. You know, it was one of those that we'd ring each other up, we'd bounce things off each other.
One of the funniest blokes I've had the pleasure of working with in the dressing room. He's absolutely fantastic, and he could probably get away with one or two things. Other lads couldn't do it. Certainly the way he put things across and say things, even to managers.
When we got promoted in 2001... we obviously went to the Millennium Stadium and we beat Leyton Orient 4-2, which game that me and Parky both played in. We got club suits. And when I came back to Blackpool, I actually wore that club suit and he had it on. I think what was my first home game? I think it was something like Doncaster in 2009. And I come in and we both had the same suit on. And that, I just looked at him, he looked at me and he just like, as if to say, don't say a word.
Great guy. Really a special part of a team that created a special bond for 5 or 6 years. Taught me as a young man, you know, as I move into management, etc., about how important the dressing room of a football club is, how important personality and character is to make sure you have good human beings around each other working hard, and Parky was very much part of that.
His manager during his time at Preston North End was David Moyes, who certainly knew that he had a talented player.
You know something, he was always funny. Parky was always funny and he was always in and around it. And he loved his horses. And I've got to say, it was someone who we enjoyed having. Parky was sweet and he could hit the ball so well. He had really powerful thighs, Parky, that's what I remember, you know, and strong legs, which always gave him I was nearly going to say he was a wee bit fat there, Parky, but he might say it. He probably was like, I think we were probably calling him that at the time. But no, he was great, and he obviously was. He was a brilliant striker of the ball. And I can remember the qualities, free kicks and what he had.
Now surely it'll be Gary Parkinson who'll step forward for this one. We've had 25 minutes of the second half. Gary Parkinson against Nick Weaver. He scores, Gary Parkinson, and Preston North End are ahead. They really look good in this game so far.
Gary Parkinson at 50 on BBC Radio Lancashire.
And as I'm sure you already know, he was a Wembley goal scorer for Jimmy Mullins Burnley back in 1994.
Parkinson's going to have a run. He's just a few yards from goal. Good overlapping. Ball played into the area. It might come for Parkinson again. Shooting. Goalkeeper's not saved it. Yeah! It's gone in. It's gone in. And Burnley have done it. Gary Parkinson.
On the park, he was a winner. In the dressing room, he was a brilliant part of the setup. Everything about the boy was absolutely superb. And when you went on the field on a Saturday, you knew what you would have got from him. He's a gem of a lad.
Well, from visiting Gary myself over the last 8 years or so, it's important that you just carry on as normal. Gary isn't someone who courts attention or wants anyone's sympathy. He's someone who just likes to have a laugh and a joke, as he always has.
Hello.
Hello. How are we?
We're fine, thank you. Come on in.
Good.
Come on in.
Great to see you, mate. How are you? You're in front of the telly.
Well, we're here with a man who can shank a football a lot further than I can kick one or ever have been able to do so. A man who's been able to score 30-yard free kicks in Middlesbrough shirts. He scored a winner for North End at Main Road that still gets spoken about. He scored a goal at Wembley for Burnley. I'm sure he's never spoken about that one, have you, mate? Gary Parkinson is looking remarkably well. Here he is with his wife and daughter. And earlier on, I sent Gary a load of messages and questions, just about to find out how he is. And I think the first one was Deborah, just how much he's enjoying the 50th year that you're both having.
Yeah, well, we're trying to celebrate the whole year, Gary, aren't we, really, instead of just the one day. So we're stretching it out, really, and making it last 12 months. So seeing as you're so special, Gary. So we've got a few things planned with the family. We've already had a few things, and just making it exciting. Those little things, but you know, they mean a lot to us.
Sophie, Dad's looking well, isn't he?
Yeah. Do you think he acts older than, or younger than 50?
He does act younger than 50. I can't believe your parents are 50, actually. I think someone's actually lying to us. He still looks like he could be playing at Deepdale or Turf Moor or the Riverside or Ayerson Park. Got to mention Ayerson Park as well. I think it's also fair to say, Gary, you've been at home 6 years or so now since you were released from the hospital, well enough to come home. Gary's been sharing what those experiences are like, Deborah, hasn't he?
He has, yeah, and it was always no question, really, that we wanted to get Gary back at home where we know we could carry on the care. As soon as we knew that, we set about sorting out the house and getting ready for Gary to come home, and it's so nice to have him here now, and I'm sure you agree, Gary, don't you, that we've carried on the care, we've had to bring in a care team and a lot of clinical stuff in the house, but we try to keep it a family home as much as we can, with Dad at the head of it all.
Just to give us an idea, your conversations around the house, which is a beautiful open-plan house here, just give us an idea of the conversation, Deborah. We have decided to have this conversation with Gary, with his full permission, in order for us to have a conversation. Gary has already given his answers and thought long and hard throughout the day about them. But in normal communications with Gary, just talk us through exactly what happens.
Well, I've got to go through the alphabet, or we all do. That's how we found the best way of communicating. I'm sure there's various different ways that you can do it with somebody like with Gary's condition. But we've chose this one, and it works by just going through the alphabet, verbally saying the alphabet. And Gary uses his eyes a lot for the movement, and he can then spell out a letter, build it into words, build sentences. And believe you me, he can certainly get his point across when he wants to, can't he, Sophie? Can make slight noises, which will attract our attention if we're not paying him the full attention that he wants. And, like any family, we try to have conversations about anything and everything, you know, and along with
opinion.
His care team. And we'll make sure we listen to Gary's opinion and take it on board. And making any decisions about anything as a family we do.
You say Dad likes his opinion. No change there, then. Yeah. Knowing Mr. Parkinson over the years, he does have an opinion. And his spelling of racehorses must be second to none.
Yeah. His knowledge, if we don't get it right, he's unbelievable. I don't know where he stores it all. But we've got to get that right. That is important to him, those horses and the names and what race is coming up next.
Just as we're recording this, Gary's sharing a racehorse. The horse is involved pretty soon, isn't it?
That's right, yeah. He's got a very small share, a syndicate, really, that the family have joined Gary in. It's to give him a little interest and something to get excited about when it's racing. So he's doing quite well, and, yeah, it races tomorrow. I'm not sure we should be telling everybody tipsters of Gary in case, but, yeah, we look forward to watching it when it's racing.
Parky, if I can just ask you, just how much are you working so hard every week at the moment to get yourself in a position that you're happy with?
I mean, it's second to none. People out there who've watched Gary over the years will know he gives 110% every time, and that's no different in this this battle that he's got on his hands. It's probably the biggest battle he's had. But there is days when you're down and don't feel like doing that, Gary, but, you know, it's not in his blood. You know, there's a song out there somewhere that it's not in his blood to give in, and he will keep going. and always does give 110%. Would you agree, Gary? Yeah, that's a definite yes.
And over the last 8 years or so, the thing I've always said to Gary is, one day I'm going to force you to do another football commentary with me, whether you like it or not, and I am determined to get you in that commentary box at Preston, at Burnley, at... I tell you what, we'll even go up to Borough if you want, but you're driving, because it's a long way. But the way this man talks about football and the way he could get his message across in a succinct fashion was always something to enjoy on the radio. You missed on the radio, Gary. We are looking forward to having you back on. You and your mate Ayrsie, we don't see either of you anywhere near enough these days. And David is here quite a lot, isn't he, Deborah?
Yeah, he is. He's been unbelievable in supporting the whole family, really, David and his family. We are quite close. They've both worked together for many years and become very good friends. And it would be nice to see that duo back together somewhere along the line. Who knows? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Can you do us a favour and go and get the black and white picture of them together? Because there is a fantastic photograph of two young men in Burnley shirts who scored goals in a Wembley final. Gary, was yours a 30-yarder or do you think the goalkeeper made a bit of a mistake that day? Yeah, well, maybe he did. But he set off like a racehorse, jumping over the hoardings at Wembley. We got a fantastic image here of Gary and David Ayres here at Wembley. And there's a brilliant birthday present that Gary got from his family of the Burnley shirt of the day framed. I hope you had it washed first, Gary, before it went in the frame. But that's a fantastic photograph. That is long before you were born, isn't it?
Yeah.
What year were you born?
2003.
Yes, it's a long way. It's a heck of a long time before you were born that goal went in. Does he mention it still? That day at Wembley?
Very much.
Oh, he loves putting it on YouTube.
Likes to bring it up a lot. Each new member we get in the team, YouTube comes out and they've got to watch. Many of Gary's old archives come out, don't they, Gary? Yeah.
I must just ask about the future, Gary. It's going to be more hard work, isn't it, that you've been putting in for the last 8 years. And I'm sure that it is really making an improvement. I have not seen you for more than a couple of years, and I am noticing so many different things about you in this visit tonight, that you carry on doing what you're doing because you're doing a fantastic job. And your family are right behind you, mate. And it's really important that you carry on getting stuck into all this work. And if you don't, there's a lady over here called Gail. And I tell you what, she's going to kick you so hard up the backside if you don't do it, that it will make you want to do it, won't it? Do you like working with Gail?
Yeah, that's a definite yes. Yeah.
That's a definite yes. Does she talk to you too much?
Yeah.
Which she likes really deep down.
Yeah.
Does she know anything about horses?
No.
Anything about football?
No.
What on earth does she talk to you about?
Anything, Gail? And everything, isn't it?
Anything and everything.
Yeah. He likes to read the gossip, does Gary,
yeah,
don't you?
Oh, yeah. He said to us the other day, I'd rather watch Love Island than the World Cup.
What? Are you serious? Love Island over the World Cup? Deary me. Is that an appointment to watch every night? Do you watch Love Island in your house?
It's got something to do with your daughters, Gary.
Love Island. We have non-stop sport on in our house.
Back in the mid-80s, this lad would have fancied himself on Love Island, wouldn't he? All those lads with fancy haircuts, he'd have been right there, wouldn't he? And now it's the second part of Gary Parkinson at 50. He's been living with locked-in syndrome since 2010. And over recent months, I've been speaking to his friends and family about how he lives with locked-in syndrome. Well, don't be fooled. Visiting Gary is a really rewarding experience, but at the same time, as I said in last week's programme, it can be a real emotional experience. Brett Ormerod won promotion with Blackpool in the same team as Gary and then returned for a second spell with the Seasiders when he was on the coaching staff.
The weirdest thing ever. I'd been sent a programme of the 2001 off a Blackpool fan, and the only two people who hadn't signed it was me and Gary Parkinson. And he'd sent it to me and said, could you please sign it and get Gary Parkinson to sign it? And it had our heads on. And I think everyone had signed out the squad, even Steve Bushell, John Hills, Phil Clarkson. right Phil Barnes, right through the team. And the only two people who hadn't signed it was me and him. And it was weird because it had come to my home address. And I'll never forget it. I took it in that day, and I took it in with the intention of getting Parky to sign it as me. And he wasn't in, and I asked Tom, and he said, oh, he's not too well at the moment. And obviously just thought he'd been ill. And that was obviously the night that he had his stroke.
Who had to tell you?
I think it was Tomo, if I remember rightly. When Tomo told us and it started filtering out that it was pretty serious. And I went to see him about a week later, a week or two later, with Tomo and Phil, the physio. And to be honest, it never really prepared me. It was very fresh. It'd only just happened. I remember meeting David Ayres on the way in. And David Ayres were talking to Tomo, and you could see his eyes were glazed over. And it's still hard to get your head around it when you know how he was. You know, he's inactive. He's a fantastic professional footballer. You know, he had a great magic wand of a right foot. A great lad to be in the dressing room. You know, was a big, massive thing for me when I was younger. You know, and I had a lot of clubs looking at me at the time, and I was going on that scoring run. And, you know, him and Paul Simpson were always there with a lot of advice, Mike Milligan as well. Mike Newell, very senior pros who I always, you know, you could always go to and would always have time of day to talk to you, put an arm around you, and just a fantastic lad. And, you know, he could have a proper crack with him, always there for you when you needed him.
And David Moyes has been a visitor to see him over the years, as well as opening the doors of Manchester United.
It was a really strange thing because he was a young man, Parky, you know, and obviously still out training, still out with the players, exercising. So it's normally something you wouldn't expect. You may be expecting and maybe somebody a bit older. So it was a real shock to us. And I think it even became an even bigger shock when we heard that it was locked-in syndrome. I spent a lot of my time going to see Gary in the hospital just up north of Bury, I think it was. And it was a difficult situation because Gary was emotional. I was emotional because you were having to go and sit and talk with someone who didn't answer you back. And, you know, and it was really difficult. And I think when you've been a player and a manager, there's a respect for both. But I think when it gets to a situation like that, there's a human aspect where you understand. I could see his family, I could see his wife, and, you know, how difficult it was for them. And I'm sure it still is very difficult for them today. But Gary, over the time I was going to see him, was improving. You know, even his communication was coming through his eyes. And it's difficult to maybe to explain on radio, but, you know, you could hear him chuckling. He was sort of laughing in the background, and he was, you know, I was telling him stories, we're talking about games. And it was difficult for him because he was the one who knew that he was in a bad situation, but couldn't even explain it, can't even talk about it. So it was difficult, but I've got to say, I left the hospital many times thinking how lucky I was and how fortunate I was. But, you know, feeling really, really sad for Gary and the situation he was in. I brought him to Carrington to see all the players and come in because it was a small thing I could do to someone, you know. And I knew that Gary loved his football. He was daft for his football. Even when I was in talking to him, I would talk to him about, you know, how the games were going, what did I think was happening, you know, how the players were. And he loved to hear it because he was a football guy. He'd been at Blackpool when the accident happened. But I think coming to Old Trafford, he probably had a chance. He was able to bring his family there as well. And I think it was special for him. And it just shows you, you know, it meant so much to him. And obviously, he's from that part of the world as well. Well, not born there, but was living around me in Manchester. So it was good to get him there. And I'm glad that his family enjoyed it.
So Gary is 50. He turned 50 back in January. His wife, Deborah, is the same age. And she's been telling me about the plans that they've put in place to celebrate.
We've changed it a little bit to probably the traditional things that you might do on your 50th, but both me and Gary said, I wanted to do something each month. So we're trying to make sure we do lots of things, little things that perhaps are not big to anybody else, but they are to us. Those little things all add up. So it's really a 50th year that we're celebrating, yeah, not just a day. We've got another trip to a nice cottage that we visit, and it's just nice to get away from the home, and Gary's nice and relaxed, and the family can join us. We sometimes get somebody from the northeast come and visit, so it's really nice. And we've got a few concerts and things planned. We've just been to see Lionel Richie, which was really nice. One of Gary's idols. But he might not want to admit that.
It's too late now.
Just just had the pleasure of spending probably 20 minutes with you both and with your daughter as well. And everyone seems in a really good place right now. Would that be fair to say?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. Yeah, we're nice and settled here and we are building a nice team around us now, a care team. So, yeah, we're kind of excited now for the future, hoping we can have a nice team and try and get on with some kind of normality in life.
When you say a team, just talk us through what you need on a daily basis.
Well, really, Gary needs obviously needs 24 hours care. I try to do a lot of the night care and eliminate as much as I can tea time, important times to the family where we don't really want as many people around us. So, but the bulk of the care is done with, we've got a team of, we've employed our own, what we call Gary's PAs, they're called personal assistants. And we've taken on a nurse we've known for a long time, cared for Gary in the early days. And she's overseeing all the medical side of Gary's care. So that it's quite a big team. We have got a physio as well, who we employed now, and a speech therapist. So it's all a big team, all playing the part to make Gary's life run a little bit smoother. And the family, really, because it helps the family. If Gary's happy, then we will be.
Have you found yourself probably reading every single manuscript, everything online, every book, everything that's ever been released about it, and yet still we need to find more answers?
Yeah, definitely. There's not a minute in a day where I'm sat with nothing much to do and I think, right, let's have a look at this, let's think about that. And we always are. And again, our team, we've got them doing the same, you know, that we're always looking for answers to questions that we're thinking and research, you know, and that's what we will always continue to do. That's in me within that I've always wanted to do that. We don't know what's around the corner, you know, we hear different stories all the time about locked in this country and other countries. And we'll keep on sourcing that, trying to find out as much as we can. Money goes to the bat when you're thinking of something like that. You think, I would do anything, you know, and just to see Gary do some of these changes would be unbelievable. And, yeah, I think we'd do anything.
He's doing a lot every week, isn't he? And that's got to be a good thing, his mind is being occupied by doing different things that one day might make a massive difference.
Yeah. Gary often mentions isolation, the word, and I hate to hear that because, you know, he's got loved ones around him daily and for him to feel like that, it makes me sad. So I do encourage them, you know, don't just leave him sat there in silence and, you know, 5 minutes will feel like a lifetime to him. So I encourage him and wanting to go out. You know, sometimes he doesn't want to and he just needs that push and a bit of encouragement. Once he's there, he's loving it, you know, and that's what we want, you know, just make sure he's busy. He was always that kind of person. He wanted to be busy. He always wanted people around him. He wasn't a loner, so we want to keep it that way.
Text 81333, starting your message with the word Lex. All texts are charged at your standard message rate.
See our privacy notice at bbc.co.uk/local-radio-privacy.
Gary Parkinson at 50. On BBC Radio Lancashire.
Well, I'm sure many of us have an idea in our minds of who you'd imagine would be the victim of a stroke. Well, the truth is, it could be any of us, as Professor Mark O'Donnell explains. He's the medical director for Blackpool Victoria Teaching Hospitals and a consultant stroke physician.
The things that are significant risk factors for having a stroke are high blood pressure. The problem with high blood pressure is that often people do not have any symptoms from it, so they don't know they've got it, which is why health checks are so important. Diabetes is a big risk factor, so people who are diabetic should do their absolute utmost to have good control of their blood sugars, and we know that that is of some benefit. And the commonest irregularity of heartbeat, called atrial fibrillation, which predisposes to people to having tiny blood clots in their circulation, which fly off from the heart and lodge in the brain and can cause a stroke. And we know that in a significant number of people who have a stroke, they have had unrecognised atrial fibrillation. So if we can pick up people with atrial fibrillation and treat that, we can reduce the number of people who go on to have a stroke.
Is it stress levels? Is it the right diet? Is it the right alcohol intake? Is it all those things to consider, quite like a heart attack?
Well, I think it is, in the sense that we're talking about a disease of the circulation, and there are a lot of similarities between a heart attack, which is a problem with the blood supply to the heart muscle, and a stroke, which is a problem with the blood supply to the brain. They share a large number of common factors. The evidence for stress of itself being responsible for stroke is pretty slim. But certainly diet, alcohol, exercise, etc., they all feed into things like your blood pressure and your general well-being, which is why it's so important.
The extent and after effects of a stroke are different for different people. Some, after treatment, are able to return to normal everyday life. Others are not quite so lucky. In Gary's case, it was evident after his stroke that his health really had taken a hit and caused locked-in syndrome. It's a condition that I'd never heard of until Gary was diagnosed with it in 2010. So to find out a little bit more about it, Professor O'Donnell helped us with a little bit of understanding.
The way I often describe this to patients in terms of the anatomy of the brain is to describe the brain like a cauliflower. So if we were to take your skull off, then looking at the brain, the surface of the brain looks a little bit like a cauliflower. And if you think of a cauliflower having a stem, there's a part of the brain called the brain stem. So the brain comprises two halves, and I'll just draw it from the side on. So if we draw the brain from the side on, so this is the, let's say, the left side of the brain. And this is called the cerebral hemisphere. And this is where speech and motor and most of your sort of conscious thinking goes on. This part at the back is called the cerebellum, and that's very important for balance. And then this part here is called the brain stem. So that's the bit I sort of refer to as the stalk of the cauliflower. In the vast majority of people who have a stroke, it affects somewhere up here. Or if you're having problems with your balance, it may be at the back affecting the cerebellum. In people who have locked-in syndrome, the brain stem becomes affected. The problem is that the nerves which control movement start up in the brain, in the cerebrum, and then pass down through the brain stem, and then go to supply the arms, the chest, the legs, etc. If you have a stroke up here, those nerves become affected, and that's why you develop a paralysis. If you think of the stalk of a cauliflower, all of the nerves are focusing into the stalk, so it's in a fairly small area. And all of those nerves will be affected by the stroke, which is why people have problems with movement in all four limbs, etc. The reason that the eye movement is preserved is that in the classical description, the posterior part of the brain stem is spared the stroke, so that those nerves are still working, so that they can still allow you to blink and move your eyes up and down.
It looks like there's a lot of damage there from where you have shown. Yeah. If you were to see a scan of Gary's brain now, yeah, it would show you the top of the stem,
yes,
looking in the state that you have just drawn now.
Yeah. Yes.
When you see that as someone who works with stroke, yeah, victims, how does it make you feel?
I think any stroke is devastating. And one of the things I say to our junior staff is that we in the hospital will see 3 or 4 patients a day with a stroke. And it's very easy for staff, I think, to become a bit complacent and say, oh, well, it's Mr. Smith and he's had a stroke. But what I always say to them, you must absolutely remember, we see 4 people like this every day. Mr. Smith and his family have probably never seen this. Mr. Smith has certainly never experienced it. So for him and his family, this is a life-changing experience, often a devastating experience, and you need to remember that. So when I see patients with stroke, I hope and pray I never have a stroke, because I think it's a nasty condition to have. I feel frustrated that there isn't more that we can do to help people with stroke. But as I said earlier, the technology and knowledge and drugs that we have available compared with 20 or 30 years ago are massively improved. So the outcome for patients with stroke is much better than it ever was. And it is likely that as time goes on, we're going to see further improvements in recognition of risk factors, drugs and other therapies that are available, progress in physio and speech therapy and occupational therapy. so that if people still have a stroke, they're likely to have a better outcome in the future. But this particular risk of locked-in syndrome is absolutely, I think, probably the most devastating of the strokes that you can have. But for some patients, given that we now have the technology to retrieve clots, it may be that we'll see fewer and fewer patients who are left with the devastating impact of a locked-in syndrome.
Well, one of the more positive things to happen to Gary since his stroke back in 2010 was being able to go home again after more than 2 years in hospital. Well, his home certainly resembles a family home rather than a hospital, but he does require round-the-clock full-time care. Part of his team is Gail Hull. She's an intensive care deputy ward manager, a nurse of 18 years, and is back working with the Parkinson family after some years away.
I came back 2 years ago and I've worked quite intensely with Gary over the last 2 years now, getting a team together and establishing the right care for him within his home, really.
Is it all about trust between the two of you? You can have a conversation that can remain private between the two of you if he needs to.
Definitely about trust. He's got to gain his trust in me and I trust him. We have many private conversations that stay between ourselves, but that's my nurse job as a nurse and my caring nature to hope that he gets the best of everything.
You see him at his best and his worst. Are the good days outweighing the bad?
Definitely. I would say he has a lot more good days than bad days, but, you know, don't we all have bad days?
And in terms of locked-in syndrome, I'd love to know more about it. I think so many countries and so many physicians or whatever would love to know more about it. Is it something that we need to almost get better at, to know so much more about it in order to help people, not just Gary, but other people who live with this condition?
Definitely, yeah. I spent several hours on the phone over the last few weeks speaking to people, speaking to neurological centres, asking them about how do they care for their people, making sure that I'm getting the right care for Gary and that we're delivering the right care at home. And they say it's very far and few, you know, what you're doing sounds like you're doing great, you can't add any more in at this moment in time. I'm always searching to make sure that we are delivering the best care for him.
It doesn't strike me that it is nurse and patient. It strikes me that you're a friend of the family, and that's the way everyone sees it.
That is a nice aspect of it all. Yeah, I'm not just a nurse, I've become a family friend as well, and it's nice to see the children grown up and to support Gary through one of his big birthdays and his wife and going on events and days out. So yeah, I see myself more as a family friend than the nurse. To just see the atmosphere that he was living in and how fantastic it was, he'd been well looked after, and his physical health and mental health is well cared for, really.
I suppose when you did come and see him, the Racing Channel was on, wasn't it?
Definitely. There's never a day goes by without it. Never a day.
It's great to have something, whatever it is, whatever your passion is in life, apart from your family and friends, something to keep the mind occupied. And it appears that racing is very much that for Gary, doesn't it?
Definitely. He loves his betting day in, day out. My granddad was a better when I was a kid. And to be able to share some of the things and stories with Gary, we have many a laughs over it. And I've put many of wrong bets on. He gives me all sorts of tips. But we have a fantastic time when we spend the day together.
Might be an impossible question to ask. Have you any idea at this stage, almost 8 years in, just how much Gary might be able to achieve in terms of everything that he's going through, the speech, the physio, the standing, the eating, the drinking? Do you have any idea whether it will help in the long term?
As professionals, we're always trying our best. We've got evidence-based stuff out there and we're always looking for more. We are hoping that, you know, in the future, you never know, people have come out of this syndrome and we'll live on the fact that he may, and we'll only try and deliver his rehab so that potentially or hopefully he could come out of it.
Very much a part of Gary's week is a time he spends with neurological specialist physio Matt Bush.
I think it's one of the hardest things to deal with physically and emotionally. I find it very difficult, particularly with someone with Gary's history. He was as fit as a butcher's dog, and to be hit as hard as he's been hit must be incredibly difficult for him, but he bears it with great dignity, great humour, you know, and it's a privilege to see him every week, and it's a privilege just to sit and have a chat with him. But it's I think it must be very difficult to cope with for him. And, you know, we deal with a lot of people that are very disabled, for want of a better word. With Gary, he bears it with such dignity and such humility, just gets on with it, and he's still a great guy. And every time we never have a bad session, we never have a difficult session, but he's always upbeat. It's a privilege to work with him. I wish I had known Gaz before, but by the same token, I wish we'd actually never met and we'd continued our lives blissfully ignorant of each other. I meet a man who is still funny, still bright, still warm, still engaging. The man he was before the stroke, I would say, is still the man I meet every Tuesday morning at 10:30. We sit and have a laugh. He still talks about football, still loves his football. All the football players that I either like or don't like are based purely on Gary's opinion. He has an encyclopedic knowledge of football that dates back. I thought my football knowledge was good, but his trumps mine no end. And he's still more than happy to talk about it, more than happy to give his opinion, more than happy to talk about the best players he's played against, the worst players he's played against. To be fair to Gary, I probably bore him witless talking about football boots, footballs, meals he had before the game, meals he had after the game, meals he had during the game. We've covered just about every aspect of football life that he is has been experienced to.
What does the sort of work that you do with him entail, Matt?
We do a lot of work in standing with Gary. Most of the time, Gaz is either sat down. He's either sat on the chair in his wheelchair or sat on the bed. He still has the ability to get to be able to stand. We use a standing frame where he's hoisted up into a standing position, and he can stand quite comfortably for in excess of an hour. And then once he's up, then we're working on head control, and then we're working on putting weight through the long bones of the legs in particular. And even though. He's got locked-in syndrome. It doesn't mean he doesn't benefit from kind of long periods of standing. And, if we could, I personally would see him every day, just getting him up out of the chair, standing, and just as a change of position more than anything. The other thing I'd really love to do with Gary, and this is where the CCG come in from Bolton NHS, is get him back in the hydro pool, because that, I think, is amazing for Gary. The benefit that would give him is quite remarkable, just in terms of relaxation, just in terms of giving him a different position to be in, giving him different surfaces to lie on. If you could only ever spend your life either sat down in a chair or laid down on a bed, I think to be given the chance to experience something different once in a while, once a week, however frequently or infrequently that may be, is invaluable, not only physically, but mentally as well. I'd like to see him more. I see him an hour and a half a week, and we have, of that, about an hour and 10 minutes is standing and working, and then we've got their transition periods as well within that, so we've got to stand him up and sit him down safely. But in that, there is a large amount of banter, laughter, and just general messing about, really.
You can't help but be inspired by the people who work with Gary, who visit him or live with him as a family. Deborah Parkinson, Gary's wife of 27 years, is frankly amazing, although she'd never accept that. Their son Luke knows just how much his mum never stops.
Every time I ever speak to someone, they'll pull you to a side and say, how does your mum manage to do it? How does she manage to do things? She does absolutely everything. She's a carer, she's a mum. She's a friend to people. She's had people who've passed away in the last few years. She was there, like, it was one of her friends died of breast cancer, unfortunately. So she just stepped in to help the lady's husband unbelievably. Like, it was family kind of thing. I don't know how she does it. She's started to work as well so she can help take her mind off things. So she does a couple of days in one of the local shopping boutiques in Bolton where we live, just to take on the things she does and still have the affection and emotion for people is just incredible. And there'll be times when she does, I don't know how many hours a day, where she'll go to work and then she comes home and stays up all night sometimes to look after my dad because carers could have let her down or whatever. But then she's still always got the battle. If someone says something about my dad that he won't be able to do this, she never gives in. Since day one, she was the person that said, don't stop, keep going. She's seen a flicker in my dad's eye and that was it. And it's been that way all the time. Everything's always positive. Of course, she has down days, everybody does, but it tends to be her own private thing, and they don't last for more than a couple of hours, and then she's back at it again. I don't know where she gets it from. Even her own family, her mum and dad, are amazed at how well she is. I was only talking to my uncle the other day, and he said he'd been to see my nana and my granddad, obviously, who's just died, and my mum was there, and she texted my uncle to say, thanks for your support today, and he just said, it's not my support that you need to be thanking for, it's yours.
You've spoken about everybody but yourself. You go to work twice a week. Do you find that refreshing? Do you find it keeps you going a little bit?
It does, yeah. It's something to get up, and them days I'm busy, so sometimes the family comes second on that day when I'm busy going out to work, and, you know, I'm just a normal mum and working like most women do. But I find it's a bit of an escape, really, you know, and it gives... And I think for Gary it's good, you know, that I'm leaving the house and I'm not on the backs of the care team, or they can do a bit of their own thing. And it's nice because he might just mention to them some things that's bothering him, or and they can take that away from me sometimes, which, again, is lovely, and that's what a team does.
Gary Parkinson at 50 on BBC Radio Lancashire.
BBC Radio Lancashire for a Wednesday evening. The jukebox is on the way from 7. Alan Bezick with The Late Show from 10 o'clock. Now to the concluding parts of Gary Parkinson at 50. Well, the list of his former teammates who show an interest in his well-being really is a large one. It's fair to say that the football family are important to him. That's according to his wife, Deborah.
What I've loved about the football, and like you say, the likes of Tony Mowbray and the team of 86 up at Middlesbrough, and then his colleagues from Burnley and all the Lancashire clubs, unbelievable. But not only just the clubs that Gary's played for, the whole football, you know, the PFA, unbelievable in uniting together, and, you know, whether it's rivalry with clubs, they've all come together at different events and supported Gary, and often ask, you know, people who we've not known that well, you know, and they've gone, oh yeah, how is Gary and how's he doing? Mm-hmm. And it's so nice, you know, to know that they are still thinking of him even now, 8 years down the line. It's incredible, and we could have never done it without the support of the football and the PFA. Gordon Taylor often comes to visit, you know, and shows an interest in Gary's health and his rehabilitation, and still wanting to help and support the family as well, not just Gary, which is a credit to the PFA, and I cannot thank them enough either.
Tony Mowbray, his former teammate at Middlesbrough, added him to his backroom staff during his spell in charge at the Riverside.
We made him in a scout, really. We send him DVDs, and he was still very much in his mind there and such, and so we tried to gauge his opinion of who he liked and who he didn't like, just to keep him involved. And you know, things like that. It was great, just so he felt that this club, he was part of his family, really, and that people cared about him and were thinking about him constantly.
Brett Ormerod's immediate thoughts after his Blackpool testimonial was for his friend and former teammate.
I donated some of my money from my testimonial to him, and I went round and handed a cheque over. And, you know, he was watching the races then, by the way, and I'm thinking, you know, that's a lot of money, this. Don't be gambling it. But no, I mean, you know, I can't speak highly enough of his family, and that it's a predicament that I don't think anyone will, you know, you wouldn't wish on your worst enemy. But I think it shows the character, the strength of character he is, you know, and his family, that they've been able to carry on like they have, because, you know, I'd never even heard of the condition until I come across it. And you won't wish it on your worst enemy.
And Steve Thompson is still actively fundraising for the family.
The fundraising will still go on with me, whether it's to get a new up-to-date van, whether it's to get a wheelchair that can turn the lights on or anything like that. So every time we do a fundraising, I'll get together with people, hopefully, like say, from Bolton, Blackpool, hopefully, with the fans there, Preston and all these, and hopefully, like I can say, we can make his life as easy as we can for Debbie and the family. But when you go around there, I can't speak highly enough of Debbie. She's been an absolute tower of strength and stood by him all this time. And like I say, she's been fantastic. I only spoke to her the other day, and I'm going to try and get up and see him on one of my days off and that.
Well, Gary might live with locked-in syndrome, but he doesn't let it control what he can and can't do. His son Luke is adamant that the time he spends with his dad is used in the same way as pretty much everyone else's.
Obviously, we can't do some of the things that you might do normally with your dad, go to the pub, walk around to the betting shop on a Saturday to do your bets or anything like that, but there's loads of things you can do. We've been to football matches together. We would have done that anyway. We used to do that. We like to go horse racing. We do that all the time. So in that respect, there's nothing that you can't really do. I'm getting married in a couple of years. He's going to be able to come to that. The only thing you've got to do is plan stuff when you want to do things like that. Obviously, you need ramps, or you need to different things that will make my dad's life better. You need a viewing platform if you go to the football so he can see, because one of his eyes are looking a certain direction. So in that respect, we do normal stuff that you would, anybody else would say that's normal what I do with my dad, and I've always tried to keep it that way. He says sometimes, oh, we can't do like dad and lad stuff, but I don't see it that way. As long as my dad's still there, then I can do dad and lad stuff.
Who knows what the future holds for Gary? Experts say the quicker the recovery process can start, the better the chance of a recovery, be it partial or full. Each case has to be reviewed individually, but according to Professor O'Donnell, a lifespan for someone with Gary's condition isn't particularly encouraging.
A lot of people who have a midbrain stroke, such as causes locked-in syndrome, will die from it because it just wipes them out. For patients with locked-in syndrome, they can live in excess of 10, 12 years. Some people are fortunate and they make a good and rapid recovery. I think in general that if you're going to recover from a stroke, you will start to recover early on. And the longer that you're left without recovery, the less likely it is that you will make any recovery.
As this 50th year draws to a close, you hope that the medical science advancements will help find something revolutionary. You know for certain that his family and friends will be by his side every step of the way.
If there's 1% chance that something can happen, we'll take the 1%, we'll take the 0.001%. Me being honest, I believe my dad one day might be able to walk and talk again. That's what I believe. If I stop believing that, then we may as well all give in and forget it all.
The support he inspires, not just through people, you know, through the radio, through football, through ex-players, through fans, the support staff that he has around him, I think is quite remarkable. I think the family, Debbie's wife and the kids, are just the amount of support and the positivity which they display, I think is humbling and I think it's remarkable. I will keep my fingers crossed from now until whenever that we get some advances in medical science, that something someday is there to help Gary, because there is no one that deserves it more, and to see him on the road to recovery would be beyond fantastic.
I heard Deborah just saying earlier that, you know, they're hoping, looking for something, and quite right, so you should be. And don't give up on that ever. But I think that, you know, people like David Ayres were incredible. You know, David Ayres and the people who gave up time to go and see him and, you know, went to see him and drop in on him was really good. And I'm really hoping that they still are, because for Gary, you know, the memories might be, it might be something that can trigger him out of it. There might be something out there which can make him, bring him back and take him out of the locked-in syndrome.
As this 50th year draws to a close, you hope that the medical science advancements will help find something revolutionary. You know for certain that his family and friends will be by his side every step of the way. Please follow the Gary Parkinson Trust on social media for updates from Gary himself and his family. I'd like to thank them all personally for their assistance and understanding in putting together this radio programme. His family are truly amazing, inspirational people. Happy 50th, Parky. Here's very much hoping that one day you'll be back on a coaching field doing a radio commentary and having a good old moan up.